Western countries like to say or like to believe that they are far more sophisticated than those countries that are still developing. The West, after all, is supposed to be made up of countries that respect the rule of law. But we whistleblowers know that's just not true. You're just as likely to be harassed, surveilled, arrested, and ruined financially and personally in the so-called developed countries as you are in the developing ones. And in banking, Switzerland is one of the worst. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. In a previous episode of the program, we told you about Bradley Birkenfeld, the courageous whistleblower who not only exposed financial wrongdoing, money laundering, and income tax evasion at the banking giant UBS, but he brought down international money laundering and income tax evasion, period. Today, we're going to tell you about another courageous whistleblower in banking who has been harassed and molested by the Swiss government and banking sector for more than a decade. Trevor Kitchen exposed a multi-billion pound sterling currency scandal. As a result, his reputation was damaged, and just 2 years ago, he was charged with defaming the Swiss banking sector. Facing several years in prison, he was saved only when the Portuguese courts elected to not extradite him. Trevor, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you.
Well, thanks for inviting me, John. It's a pleasure to meet you and be on your show.
Trevor, in a funny way, your story is the reverse of so many other whistleblowers. Your whistleblowing was clear-cut. You blew the whistle on what was really an international banking conspiracy to manipulate foreign currency exchange. I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. What makes your story so different is your whistleblowing was obviously a public service, and you were clearly reporting a crime. But your life went off the rails for more than a decade because of the very powerful governments and organizations that went after you. Let's begin with your actual whistleblowing. Tell us what you saw, when that was, and how you reported it.
Okay, John. Well, to give you a little bit of background first, I've been working as a finance controller for about 35 years. And I was quite familiar with multiple currencies, working in multiple currencies, that the companies that I worked at, we traded in those. And when I retired, I decided I wanted to supplement my pension. So in February 2008, something happened that caught my eye and my attention. I noticed that for the first time in history, that the dollar had sank below parity to the Swiss franc. That was August 2011. It hit rock bottom. The dollar had once been worth two Swiss francs 90. It now only bought 72 cents. And between 2010 and 2011, the Swiss franc had strengthened 60% against the dollar. So the Swiss franc was just going up and up and up, and the dollar was being systematically destroyed in the process. Sterling and euro, they were not doing too much better themselves. Anyway, these monumental shifts did not reflect natural economic forces of supply and demand, nor did they result in trade imbalances between the different countries. Switzerland's a tiny country. You know, it's got small exports compared to the USA. So using my financial background and my forensic skills, I started to assemble data. I charted market movements and calculated the amount of money that would be needed to achieve these colossal movements that were going on. I wasn't an inside banker. I want to make that perfectly clear for your readers, for your viewers. But after extensive independent analysis, that was my own independent analysis, that was informed by decades of experience, I was able to detect, after painstaking analysis, that they were able to get away with this for such a long time because it was difficult to determine what was really happening. So based on the expertise I had developed over these decades and training experience, in trading, I detected that these currency rates were being manipulated by major banks and traders. At the same time, Swiss law firms were springing up everywhere in Zurich. I noticed this straight away. They were called wealth managers, family wealth. These law firms enabled massive wealth transfer for high net worth individual investors and the conglomerates. Lawyers worked with banks on how to do just that. Investors and conglomerates can hold bank accounts anywhere in the world. We can't. Individuals can't. I traveled a lot in my life, and you just cannot open bank accounts very easily nowadays. But conglomerates and investors can, especially the elite investors. So my concern was that the devaluation of the dollar would now start damaging the purchasing power of poorer nations, you know, nations with weaker economies. So these banks were, I came to the conclusion that these banks were massively short in the US dollar and sterling for that matter, for the benefit of their investors. And compared to the rest of the world, the Swiss economy at that stage remained unscathed by the economic crisis. Now, how I reported it, I was living in a very secretive Switzerland, and I knew I was putting myself and my family at great risk. But after discovering warning signs of currency manipulation in August 2011, I blew the whistle loud and clear to all the regulators in the USA, Switzerland, and further afield, and the UK. I was on a passionate campaign to convince these regulators that they should investigate who was responsible for manipulating these currencies. There was clear manipulation. So I sent all of my findings and detailed assessment along with substantial correspondence to regulators. That was the CFTC, the FCA in the UK. Now the CFTC is the Commodities Future and Trading in the USA. And I sent it to the Swiss regulator, the EU Commission, and some other government departments. Now, for 2 years, I reached out to these, including the IMF, the UK's Treasury, fraud offices, and even MPs. I included in my data explanations and evidence to support my assessment that banks and traders were manipulating the currency markets. And I shared these communications with regulators and important media outlets, even Russian television, RT, Bloomberg, The Guardian, and the International Business Times. I described how banks had used high leverage, high frequency, algorithmic trading for the first time. Nobody had heard of that word, algorithmic trading. Anyway, where was I trading? I was trading at a small company in Switzerland called Oanda, if I can mention it here. And the owner of that company was a family member of the bank Julius Baer. And they worked with UBS, Credit Suisse, JP Morgan, and Zurich's Cantonal Bank. Later, I emailed this owner some data asking him why his partner was the head of the NFA. Now, the NFA is the National Futures Authority in the USA. And he was on the head of their currency advisory committee. Now, the NFA are empowered by the CFTC to monitor and report on currencies. The owner came straight back to me and accused me of libel and threatened to take criminal action.
It turned out that your real enemies, those who wished you actual harm, were in Switzerland. 2 years ago, at the age of 70, you were abruptly arrested in Portugal, taken to solitary confinement in a maximum security prison, denied your medication, given ill-fitting and filthy clothes, and denied access to an attorney and an interpreter for a period. One Portuguese prison guard told you this treatment was not coming from them, but from the Swiss government. What was that like? Did you know what you'd be up against from the Swiss?
No, John, I had no idea. I'd retired on Madeira Island with my wife. It was cold, and they took me to this cell. It was dirty, it was cold, and I had to sleep on a slab of concrete for 2 nights. There was no heating, I wasn't allowed bottled water. It was scary because, you know, in Europe, there's no habeas corpus rights. They don't exist in Switzerland nor Europe. And it seemed to me like the people on Madeira, or these judiciary police, were looking at me as though I was some sort of dangerous criminal. I wasn't even given Miranda rights. There was no interpreter in the beginning. There was no attorney given to me, or nothing. And the arrest warrant was in Portuguese. My wife wasn't even allowed to see me or bring me food and water. So after 48 hours, I'm released in handcuffs. Can you believe it? In handcuffs. And the judge immediately apologized to me and said, the Swiss want to extradite me to Switzerland to serve a 3-year prison sentence for committing crimes against personal honor and violation to privacy and secrecy. I'm put under arrest then for 5 months, house arrest. I have to stay on the island, and I'm put under house arrest. Did I know that I was what I was up against with these Swiss? I'd rather say, did I know that Swiss prosecutors could be so vindictive and brutal? You know, some of these prosecutors are just rogues. I mean, they're roaming around Europe grabbing people for things like speech. I mean, this is incredible. So these Swiss prosecutors wield enormous powers, and they act in Switzerland as prosecutor, jury, and judge. And 95% of the cases, the criminal cases in Switzerland, are dealt by prosecutors alone. There's no judge. So this tyrant prosecutor that had already interrogated and searched my ex-wife's apartment in Zurich with no warrant, my ex-wife in Zurich has a pacemaker. She's 70 years of age, and we've been divorced 35 years. This prosecutor had her interrogated, trying to find out where I was. Then she removes $40,000 from my bank account and starts hunting me across Europe. She instructs foreign judiciary police how they should treat me on Madeira. Now look, I've heard some horror stories about Swiss prosecutors and police using psychological torture and on their captives, especially foreigners. Now 90% of the criminals in Switzerland are foreign. 90%. That's difficult for me to comprehend, this type of immoral, unethical. I think it's insane. People who report corruption and wrongdoing are not criminals, John. I'm not a criminal. The Swiss have weaponized the justice system. They jump jurisdictions to get even with whistleblowers who report corruption.
We're speaking with international banking whistleblower Trevor Kitchen. We have a lot more to ask him, especially about his work to remain out of the clutches of Swiss authorities. So stay tuned.
Shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously. Why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Every spring and summer, the melting Arctic snow reveals abandoned machinery, millions of rusty barrels, and the detritus left by human expansion into this most inaccessible of territories.
Я, конечно, был в шоке, как можно было так засраться по самые помидоры. Это просто печальное зрелище.
Volunteers from Clean Arctic travel to Heise Island, home to the biggest polar station on the Franz Josef Land archipelago.
Сера, грязь непролазная. Боже мой, я тут еще целый месяц.
У меня были первые мысли. Нас обманули, нам подсунули какой-то самый стрёмный остров во всем архипелаге.
Это одна из самых северных земель на нашей планете, от которой до Северного полюса примерно 1000 километров.
The Arctic pioneers' main objective was to explore and conquer these harsh lands. They had no time to think about waste management. Now their legacy could remain for centuries.
Как мы, наверное, человечество в целом выглядим, наверное, нелицеприятно. Такое чувство, что мы засрём эту планетку, а потом полетим куда-то делать это еще.
Чистый север, чистая Арктика!
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with international banking whistleblower Trevor Kitchen. Trevor, thanks for staying with us. You won your case in Portugal before a panel of three judges, but the Portuguese prosecutor appealed that, so it remained hanging over your head. You were warned that you would be charged in Switzerland with defamation and with violating privacy and bank secrecy laws, and you were facing 3 years in prison. The truth is, the Swiss were embarrassed and perhaps humiliated that you had called them out publicly. You had aired their dirty laundry. We know that this is a Swiss tactic against financial whistleblowers. UBS whistleblower Brad Birkenfeld had gone up against the same thing that you did. But you also won your appeal, and you were permitted to leave Portugal. What happened next?
By now, I had a UK lawyer, and he sent a complaint to the Portuguese Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and he followed up on that by sending two letters to the Swiss General Attorney describing Switzerland's behavior as inhumane and degrading. It was a breach of civil rights, he wrote, and he said it's politically motivated because of my whistleblowing activities. He asked them to promptly withdraw their warrant and terminate all criminal proceedings against me. The Swiss Attorney General snubbed both of his letters. We've never got a reply. My Portuguese lawyer in the courts, already at the Supreme Court, had characterized the Swiss prosecutor's behavior as political oppression, or repression rather, and persecution that is absolutely contrary to European law. It's an abuse of power and personal revenge. Anyway, at that point, my wife and I, still on Madeira Island, we felt threatened. We didn't feel secure in Europe. So my wife and I decided to leave Europe and head back to South Africa, where I used to live. And all my family had passed on in South Africa, so I felt I wanted to go there and live my last few years there. I'm 72 now, almost. Anyway, my UK lawyer had advised me to keep a copy of the Supreme Court decision just in case I'm stopped anywhere in Europe. I did that, and my wife warned me a few times. She said, look, if we're going to fly down to South Africa, we better go direct because you're not wanted in Portugal anymore. We better not go anywhere near the EU. So my lawyer said, take the Supreme Court decision with you. I did that. And I was in for the shock of my life because transiting Schiphol Airport, I'm instantly rearrested. on the exact same Swiss warrant. The Dutch had ignored Portugal's four judges' decision. They confiscated my passport, photographed, fingerprinted me for a second time in 16 months. They stripped me naked and put me in solitary confinement. I wasn't allowed any my own medication was forbidden. I asked them, well, why am I forbidden my own medication? They said, well, you know, we have to worry about drugs and everything. I said, well, could I at least get a book to read from my suitcase? No, in case you've got drugs on the pages. I thought, what the heck is going on here? Anyway, that was something else. So I was denied my medicine, and I was therefore in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day in this Dutch prison at Schiphol Airport, near Schiphol Airport. And I had a phone call in the room there, and I was allowed to speak with my wife by phone, and she visited me twice, I think. Anyway, eventually she managed to find a 22 square meter hotel room. The Dutch let me out after 14 days. The judges, they were shocked. They were actually shocked to see me in front of them for writing email complaints to, you know, alerting corruption. They couldn't believe it. So they said, well, the Dutch prosecutor wants your passport. So I had to leave that with the Dutch prosecutor, and I had to report to the police station once a week. They gave me a Dutch lawyer, and the Dutch lawyer told me that the courts are so busy with serious crime cases that it could take years before this extradition verdict is coming through, and I have to sit there for years. But then she quickly told me something. She said, you know, it's not a crime if you would escape this extradition. It's not a criminal offense. And I thought about that, because we couldn't afford this 3,000 euro rent each month. So we escaped Holland by road. When I got back to my destination, I phoned my lawyer, and he said, you're free. Here, you're free. I'm in Portugal. So the Dutch lawyer sends me an email, and she warns me that if I ever enter any Dutch enclave anywhere in the world, I'll be rearrested. The Dutch prosecutor refuses to return my passport, and now the UK have refused to give me a new passport for the last 9 months. So I have no passport. It's a horror story.
The FBI whistleblower Jane Turner, who also works with the National Whistleblower Center here in the United States, has called you one of the bravest and most important whistleblowers ever to come out of the banking sector. What would you say to others in international banking who are considering blowing the whistle on waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality? You know how high the price can be. What would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them to forget about trying to get exposure through or to reveal any of this through the media, because the media just don't help. The mainstream media don't help people with truth nowadays. And I would also warn them that if they want to speak truth to power in Switzerland, a country that now seems to regard itself as master of the world, they need to remember that Swiss lawyers and prosecutors are good at twisting truth. They are naturally, in my opinion, they're naturally born liars, because that's what they do. I'd ask people here, any whistleblower, go and read John Grisham's books. Don't trust any law enforcers or the leaders who give these people privileged powers to attack public speech. I'd say they need to remember that there's no habeas corpus rights anywhere in Europe, especially Switzerland. And it seems to me that the European benchmark for justice has now become double standards and a hypocrisy. I tell people not to bother wasting time blowing the whistle with incorrigible officials, because nothing will ever change until these people who are running our laws and politics are replaced with honest leaders. They need to beware when traveling in the Schengen too. This is where I am now, because a lot of people don't realize this, but In the USA and the UK, you don't need an ID to go traveling from state to state or going into hotels. But in Europe, in this Schengen wonderland, every policeman and every hotel receptionist is a border control. And no one is safe from this EU's abusive arrest warrant.
What's next for you, Trevor? Many whistleblowers speak, teach, lecture, and write about their experiences. Many try to be something of a sentinel of the public trust. What have you been doing since leaving Portugal?
Well, I've been reading and listening to a lot of whistleblowers in Switzerland. I've spoken to them. I've read their stories about Swiss corruption in the prosecution services and about the type of Swiss brutality that goes on in the Swiss police force. There are many people there. They have the highest detention center, detentions of Switzerland has the highest percentage in the world of detainees that have not been put on trial. There is no trial. So what I'd like to do for the future is I'd like to try to help those poor people in Switzerland and other places that have no voice, to reveal the truth about what really goes on in these, in some of these places like Switzerland, especially Switzerland with all of its secrecy. And I'd like to finish by quoting something from Professor Roger Scruton, if I may. He says, the common law tells us that the ordinary person is in charge of the law, not the people who are there pretending to impose it on him or her.
That's all the time we have for you today. I'd like to thank our guest, Trevor Kitchen, and I would like to thank our viewers for joining us. Mahatma Gandhi once said that truth never damages a cause that is just. He was right. Speaking the truth takes strength and courage. It's not always easy to do, and sometimes we don't even understand where that strength comes from. But without whistleblowers like Trevor Kitchen, the world would be a far different place. I'm John Kiriakou, and you've been watching The Whistleblowers. We'll see you next time.